Okay.
It's running?
Yeah.
Time is good? Okay. Today is Sunday, March 30th, 2014. We're in our final shiur in Halacha before the Chag HaGadol HaBa'aleinu LeTova. Probably our final shiur for the year as far as having students who have minds that are listening, because after Pesach, everyone is worried about their future, what's going to be next year, the shtalar I'm going to, the mechanech I'm going to be. The Rebbe is worried whether you'll be Rabbanim or Ra-Bunim. And only time will tell. So I appreciate your worries, and I'm happy that I have students listening across the wide expanse of the world, so at least the shiur is not in vain. Now, some interesting information that came in. I don't know whether it was in the Sunday class or the Monday class, but I questioned last week whether the Rav would be Masada Kedushin in a shul. In other words, Meikir Hadin, you're not allowed to be Masada Kedushin in a shul, not allowed to have a wedding in a shul, because a wedding is a, there's no Kedusha to it, and it's just a transaction. A man is gaining a wife, a woman is gaining a husband, but it's a ktuvah. A ktuvah is basically a business deal, and how can you do that in a shul? So I mentioned that in modern times, when they build a shul like the Great Synagogue, when they dedicated the Great Synagogue, I know that they made a tenai that they should be able to do certain things in the shul. It shouldn't have a full kedusha, and among what they could do in the shul would be siddur kedushin. But I questioned about the Rav. So and the Chatam Sofer, you know, the Reform, when the Reform movement began, they made weddings dafka in the temple. And the Chatam Sofer fought it bitterly. And Chas v'Chalila, you should make a wedding in a shul. And I mentioned that Rav David Lipschitz, for instance, would never be Masada Kedushin in a shul. So I got a email from my student, Rabbi Mark Dratch. You all know Rabbi Dratch, at Libin Biwala, Chosheva, Talmud Chacham, Yorei V'Shalem. You know him from West Hempstead. Right. So Mark writes to me, you questioned whether the Rav Zitzal would be Masada Kedushin in a shul. In September 1982, the Rav was Masada Kedushin for Sarah Lamb, Allah Aleha Shalom, and me at the Great Neck Synagogue. Okay, so you have Eidut Nemanah that the Rav was Masada Kedushin in a shul. By the way, in establishing my ownership of the ring, he grilled me for a few minutes. Is this your ring? How did you pay for it? Where has it been until now? Finally, do you have a receipt? By the way, I wrote back to him that I was being Masada Kedushin this past Friday, so I told him I will not grill my Talmud to that extent. But what was funny about the Siddur Kedushin Friday, it was a beautiful wedding and beautiful weather, and I never had a chatan like this. He was 40, he's in his early 40s, and the first marriage, and he kept on saying to me, I'm taking care of the tuva, the kinyonim, and he keeps on saying, Rebbe, is it really happening? Rebbe, is it really happening? Then under the chuppah, one of the Eidim was a Rav, a Talmud Chacham, and originally wanted me to read the Ketuvah Torah. You know, when the Belz HaRebbe comes, I think he gets all the kibbutim. I'm a Sada Kedushin, I don't need anything else. So I got the Rabbi Cohn, Kenny Cohn, finally to read the Ketuvah. But when I asked him, this ring is yours, right? Does it have a Shava Pruta? So the two Eidim, Kenny Cohn, starts looking at it. He says, well, what do you think? He says to the other Eid, does it have a Shava Pruta? So I wrote to Mark that I wouldn't grill them, but Kenny Cohn took care of it for me. I remember that my friend Barry Fetter got married in the gymnasium of the Jewish center in Scranton, and not the shul, because he wanted Rav David Lipschitz to officiate. So we have Eidut Nemanah here answering our question, and I was correct about as far as Rav David Lipschitz, and as far as Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, At least we know at this wedding he was Masar Kedushin in the great next synagogue. Again, you mintensich quibbling. In other words, you can argue with me and you can say to me, maybe in the great next synagogue they built it al Tanai. I agree with you. But once the rub in public is Masar Kedushin in a synagogue, it sets a precedent. Off the cuff, I can tell you there is one advantage to being Masar Kedushin in a synagogue. It adds a religious overtone to the wedding. And b'frat b'zman hazen, when we live in the world of Obama and the French politicians, it is very important when we're Masar Kedushin to give it a religious overtone. Okay, now let me roll, and today she is extremely important.
I couldn't understand. It's like locked into a certain,
it's
written in the book, there's no,
Rabbi Rubin, I think you have to be a little bit hesitant in commenting on Rav David Lifshitz, but the Tzuvalka Rav, look,
sorry, I don't know if you accept that. The fact that he was a rabbi once
in
a small town in Europe.
Tzuvalk was not exactly a small town, it was a medium-sized town. And he was Tzuvalk a rav, and he was a big lamdan. But not only that, he spoke perfect Hebrew. Look what the man spoke perfect modern Hebrew. Also, he was not an agudist. You gotta give credit for his generation. He was not an agudist. He tried to bridge the Mizrahi and the Aguda. He called a kavod to him. That he was locked into a certain lifestyle, but he had a lot of good influence. He was very warm. Zayavadim, Reb David was Reb David. All right, to say that. It's a discussion for another time. Okay, so let's just pick up where we left off, and you'll see I'm going to work in very contemporary events in 1 minute. We're dealing here with the classic problem of a ribbon. We've been dealing with this problem for many months. We have quite a few months yet to go, and it's basically an insoluble problem, because if you're chayshish for the Rambam Shita of Tetzayin Amot, then where in the world can you build an Erev? You need regular fences. A tzurat petach, an artificial gate, as we can call it, or an artificial door, is not enough. Nevertheless, the Hasidic world certainly had no problem. They paskened like the Bet Ephraim, and they were not chayshish for the Shita Tarambam. In addition, what do you do when... Fine, you're not conscious for the Shita Tarambam, but what do you do if there's a city where 600,000 people are out in the streets, where it's a Rishut Tarambam, perhaps the Oraita? And there you certainly can't get away with Tzuret HaPetach. You need actual mitzvot, actual walls. The Rubo Kukulo, the majority of the city, has to be properly fenced in. This machloket went on in the 19th century. The Mishkanot Yaakov, Rabbi Yaakov Kalina, Talmud Mufhak of Rabbi Chaim Volozhin, was machmir. He was chayshish l'shita Tarambam. Even at that level already, he would require regular fences. And halachat kama v'kama, when you take a city where you're chayshish, 600,000 people are going to be out in the streets. On the other hand, the Hasidic world was mekil, and we know that a ruvim were put up in every big city imaginable, including Warsaw, including Lodz, including Amsterdam, including Paris, and many times the example of Paris, of course, with the heksha of Reb Chaim Moshe Grzynski, they say the Chazon Ish also, and I gave you all the makorot for Lahakel, Lahachmir, and this machloket went on. In the United States of America, the problem began 110 years ago, 112 years ago, on the east side of New York, 1902 already. They thought in terms of that it should be mutter to carry, using the Third Avenue well as part of the Tzuret HaPetach. There you could be more makil, because Manhattan is an island. Not only is it an island, the whole world is an island, as we discussed in great depth. But Manhattan's a unique island, Because if you stand on top of a house in the middle of Manhattan, you can see both the Hudson River and the Harlem River. And you know you can walk from one to the other. I used to be able to walk it in 40 minutes. You could go from one end of Manhattan to another, from east to west, west to east, La Brioche, and therefore, Minken Epshim or Makil sign. This problem resurfaced with Manhattan after World War II. In World War II, the problem was forgotten. The original Jews who came to America knew about Shabbos yet from the Alte Heim. Their children didn't give a hoot about Shabbos. Their grandchildren were lucky if they went to a Reformed temple. Who the heck is interested in an Erev? But with, sitting in this classroom are two Arnolds from the Bronx. We are the exceptions that prove the rule. In other words, we grew up a few blocks from each other, Shomer Shabbos kids, as a result of the Shanghai crowd, we have to be honest, and they straightened us out. Then how many kids were there our age? There were kids our age. Moshe Chaim, there were kids our age, tens of thousands. How many are Jews yet today, our age? God have mercy. Of course, there are Balei Tshuva, and I don't want to put down the miracle of the rebirth. As I told you, the first kid I was bar mitzvah, I made a bar mitzvah for in Maplewood, New Jersey, the first Orthodox shul, suburban Essex County. We're going back to 1963, okay? I always thought about this kid. I figured he has to be a goy gomor by today. You know that why you traced me down for him. I get an email. He went back to his original name. He learns every day. He listens to Moshe Yurim faithfully. So, you know, miracles happen. But the truth has to be said. Who cared about an Erev? Then, of course, Avraham and I, we're both Arnold, but he's Avraham Amaron. So we went to school. Many of our classmates were survivors, right or wrong. I'll give you a name that the person who drove me to the wedding on Friday drove me home and everything, learned in the Kollel, and he told, I never knew his life story. It was my Talmud 20 years ago. I never knew his life story. Told me his life story in the car. And he was a typical kid from Frisch. He comes to BMT. This is when I was no longer teaching there. It's when they had the early retirement. They got rid of us, but Rabbi Miller was the dean. And suddenly he's stopping here, 50 minutes stopping on a Tuesday. The kid has gone out of his mind. I mean, if my shul, if davening would take 50 minutes, they'd shoot the chazan, plain and simple. We'd have a different chazan every Tuesday because he'd be dead. Take my word for it. The kid was used to 30 minutes davening. So he went to Rabbi Miller, and he said to Rabbi Miller, I'm bored out of my wits. Now you'll understand what you can learn from Reb David Miller. Reb David said to him, you know what, you're from Frisch, you're not used to this yeshiva davening. Bring a sefer with you, bring a book with you. And when you're finished with your own davening and you can't concentrate anymore, read the book. And the kid said, this saved my life. He brought a book, a second book. Then he decided, gee, Rabbi Miller's such a good Rebbe, I gotta go to Yeshiva College. Gotta go to the Yeshiva program. There he had Reb Abba Brandspiegel. We grew up with Reb Abba. Now you gotta remember, after World War II, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of refugees poured into the New York area. Many of them, as we learned in our Monday class in great depth with many sources, many of them came with a resolution. If Hitler didn't take their religion away, America's not going to take their religion away. And particularly the Hasidic world started to yell and shout, we want an Erev. And then the big machloket began with Manhattan. And you see, Reb Moshe was choshish. He didn't want to be matir, but he said, Sistar Greisa Rabbanim, their great Rabbanim, who are Mekil, and Minkenev say Somak sign. You can depend upon them. Then, of course, the problem began in Brooklyn. And as Raket had said, and I hit the nail on the head, I said this b'shat ma'aseh. I was in the Rabnut already when this problem broke out in the 60s. I said, once Reb Moshe is mater and erev in Spring Valley, in Muncie, in Kew Gardens Hills, that all happened in my time in America. I said, every community is going to demand an erev. Then Brooklyn demanded an Erev. and Reb Moshe refused to go along. Reb Moshe felt that Brooklyn was a Rishut HaRabim D'Oraita, 600,000 people on the streets. Okay, that's Brooklyn. The Hasidic world was yelling and shouting. What do you mean Brooklyn is 600,000? Let's think for a minute. What did Warsaw have? What did Lodz have? They found a solution. And one individual, although I admit that the Satmar Beit Din played a big role, but no one dealt with this problem more than Reb Menashe Klein. And Reb Menashe Klein came to the conclusion that Brooklyn is no more than a Carmelit. And if it's no more than a Carmelit, not a Rishut HaRabim D'Oraita, we can use Tzirat HaPetach. And we can be samach on the Beit Ephraim. Okay? The world caved in on him. By now there was a concept of Das Torah. And at the Agudas HaRabbanim convention, as I explained last week, Reb Simcha Elberg and others got up and criticized Reb Menashe HaKotten. That's the way he signed his name. How can you dare argue with Reb Moshe Feinstein, the Gadol Hadar? And I showed you that they had had an argument back in 1952. You all had a good laugh, but it is a true story. We wear a hat, new. The hat I wear, wherever it is in my office now, maybe it cost me 50 shekel. If the rain will ruin the hat, it's not the end of the world. But when you wear a shtreimel that costs thousands of dollars, does anyone here wear a shtreimel Shabbos? How many furs do you have in a shtreimel? 12, shift day car. Shtreimel in Israel now, they don't allow import of fur, animal, anything made from fur, be kind to animals, but there's an exception. Furs for shtreimels, you're allowed to import. Baruch Hashem, the Knesset went along with that request. So, you wear a shtreimel. Again, I have a problem. I have a mink shtreimel that I bought in Russia, Knein Harad, this is the real McCoy what I have. And I don't wear it in the rain. I don't know why I don't wear it. The mink walked around in the rain, didn't he? But everyone is chayshish that the shtreimel will be harmed by the rain. So you put a plastic cap on. Reb Moshe Asid, remember? And Reb Menashe Klein wrote, he was a little kid then, he writes to Reb Moshe, can I argue with Moshe? Absolutely, you have to argue with me. This is Torah, the truth has to be said. And Reb Moshe writes to him, and they have that argument, and the Hasidim will follow Reb Menashe Klein, who is Meikhil, and the Litvakin, who don't wear shtreimels, no, so they follow Reb Moshe. Big deal. Maybe a black hat, or those fancy black hats. Do they cover it with plastic? But yeah, they cover it today. But a Litvak too? I mean, Reb Moshe Rasse, the Litvak too covers, all right? They have Yeshami Lismoch. Yeshami Lismoch. Okay. By the 70s, they attacked Reb Menashe Klein. And as I showed you last week, he fought back. He fought back very strongly. And first of all, you have a right to argue. There's no such thing as a Gadol Hadar. Everyone has to express their opinion. In the Sanhedrin, you begin min haksad, and the Gemara, as we showed you the sources, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, why do you begin min haksad? So you won't be afraid to contradict the Nasi or the Av Beit Din. They speak last. The little guys like us speak first. So, but more than that, last week's shiur, we went into a very interesting question. What is halacha all about? The Gemara Nida, what we discussed with Jalta, how she went and asked the same Shailan, Dam Nida, of two Amorayim. The first one Asid, the second one was Matia. So you all know a basic concept in halacha, you can't ask a Shaila twice. Is that so? So I showed you Tosfot. And to be very brief, what the Gemara means, you can't ask a Shaila twice without telling the second person you already asked it, who you asked it from, and what he paskined. But Reb Menashe Klein, and I gave you the source, the Shari Halacha, Chaveret Yud Gimel, Reb Menashe Klein brings source after source. The whole halachic process is you throw a question out into the public thoroughfare. And this, by the way, is very contemporary. I have to be honest with you. This whole machlokes that broke out between Chovevei Torah and YU, of course a Rav can paskin a shaila. When you get a question, I just got a question, my grandson asked me a question. He stuck a milchika fork into hot meat. No, of course you're going to paskin the shaila. People are going to call you, can you use quinoa on Pesach? Can't you use quinoa? All right, today the OU is giving a heksha. You can absolutely paskin, they can use quinoa. You don't have to be a goan, a gadol hadar, as long as it has a good heksha. The OU broke down, because a year ago they wouldn't give a heksha, because it's machlokes between Rav Heschel and Rav Belsky, and this year they're giving a heksha, because Rabbi Heineman already was giving a heksha. And people know how to learn. I mean, there's no way that quinoa can be considered a part of the gezeira of kidniyot. All right, these are shailas, so you get a shaila, let's say for the sake of argument, on Shabbos, can you use an automatic elevator? All right, you do your homework, can you use a Frigidaire Shabbos? The whole shaila, forget about the light. The light you take out, but what about the cold air comes in, the hot air comes in, the thermostat, can you open a door on Shabbos? You have an air conditioner on, you follow the same shaila. You open the door, hot air comes in, you kick off the air conditioner ultimately. No, you do your homework, you look into the Shmir Shabbat Kehilchata. But there's shailas that are epic making, that go way beyond the individual. You have shailas of aguna. I mean, you have any idea what aguna means? You have a shaila of aguna. Look today what happened in Los Angeles. Do I have to go further where a man remarries with a het d'meir rabbanim and he leaves the woman in aguna and it's on the front page of the New York Times? I told you last week, I don't go into more detail. It's a Chil Hashem, in my humble opinion. These are difficult shaylos.
100 rabbis participated in this evil thing.
I don't know if 100 rabbis participated. The Beis Din in Muncie doesn't exactly have a reputation for their intellectual honesty. But I don't know details. But if they got 100 rabbis to participate, it's even more serious. It's like Korach v'Adatov, you understand? Very serious. Shem Yerachem. There was another in the 70s out of Los Angeles. There was a case that broke that I still shiver and shake because I met the people involved. Reb Moshe, you remember Reb Moshe had a published in Jewish press that he was misled into signing the Het d'Meir Rabbanim. What a story. It was a Sakma Chassid who made a lot of money. And he decided to get rid of his wife. I don't know if it's his secretary, what. But he didn't want to pay her. So he got doctors, he paid off. They should give him a letter that she has problems over here. And he goes to Reb Moshe and he got a whole heta and his wife is in a Beit Meshugayim and it turned out I met the woman afterwards as normal, as decent, as upright. And it was all, and Reb Moshe had to remove his signature. I know a case in Toronto like Gutzalapitten. In Israel, Baruch Hashem, give the rabbinate credit. It's a million times better. Remember what I told you. You hear a Beitin Paskin's chovat to give a get, you don't give a get, you lose all your privileges. You can't get a check account, you can't get a visa, driver's license, etc. You still don't give a get, they throw you into jail. If a guy's in jail already, remember what I told you, my daughter testified, it was just a few years ago, she testified in the Knesset, that this has to be rectified. Guys in jail, the only ones who can put a person in jail into solitary confinement are high-ranking officers in the jail system, in Shabbat, Sherit Bitachon Sohar, and Avot Batei Dinim have that power today. So Israel, Baruch Hashem, we're a lot better. But wow, Chilul Hashem. So there are questions, civil marriage, mamzeret. A rab gets a shiloh with mamzeret, a young rabbi. All right, what do? You have to turn, you need guidance, you have to do your homework. Remember I told you this story with Rabbi Alpert, with the rab, with the mamzeret shiloh. And the Rav says to Rabbi Alpert, Rabbi Alpert, I'm not your encyclopedia. Did you do your homework? And Rabbi Alpert starts giving sources. Remember I told you the story? All right. And of course, he didn't tell the Rebbe that he spoke with Reb Moshe Feinstein a half hour earlier. But the Rebbe said to him, Albert, ein zach ken et chayv sagen. I am my chizdas nish. One thing I can tell you, this is not your mind. Someone helped you with the homework. Of course, Reb Moshe Feinstein helped him. But Reb Moshe reached the conclusion and Ken Makel's line, and the Rebbe reached the conclusion. So you see, with Chovei Vetorah, not every question can the rabbi, a newly minted musmach, suddenly can decide a question like Shira Chadasha, partnership minyanim. These are questions. Go back 110 years ago, Solomon Schechter, the Mechitza, the synagogue. These are questions at the very core of Yiddishkeit. You have to consult with others. You have to have a Rebbe. And this is the whole concept. You go and ask a Shaila, and here at Menashe Klein is very powerful. The more people talk about it, the more you reach truth. More Rabbanim see, more Rabbanim publish. And he says, a Shaila Veirev, a Shaila of Brooklyn. He says, why? Reb Moshe Paskin? But that's not the end of the world. There are other Rabbanim, there are other Psakim. And even Reb Moshe says, if Rabbanim did it in Manhattan, who knew what they were doing, and Reb Moshe says the Choshev of Rabbanim, you can be samach on them. He's not matir, but you can be samach. Okay. Now, let me go one step further. The Lakewood crowd got involved. By the early 70s, Lakewood is on the map. Lakewood blossoms. In the 50s, you're dealing with a small yeshiva. In the time that I learned in Lakewood, there are like 105 students there at most. Under Reb Schneer originally, alright, 200, 300. But by the 70s already, Lakewood has expanded. Lakewood is a shame duffer. And Lakewood is Lakewood. And students from Lakewood write to Reb Menashe Klein maledicting him. How can you argue? Who are you to argue? Moshe spoke, and Reb Menashe Klein doesn't ignore them. He takes them on. He evidently knows some of the people involved who are writing to him from Lakewood, or at least he knows their parents. Now, what becomes critical? And Reb Menashe writes to them, I already wrote to Rabbi Elberg, he reproduces that letter. He speaks about the ability to have machlokes, that Reb Moshe himself said you can differ with me. He goes into the fact that we ended off the last week's class, quoting him, they're Rebbim in this city, that city, the other city, etc. But there's one Gemara that becomes crucial. And it's a sugya that begins in a Rebbim, I would say on Daf Yud Zayin Amid Aleph, although I'll give you an exact source, the Gemara I'm going to deal with is a few blocks later. But I want to quote this Gemara on Yud Zayin Amid Aleph for very partisan reasons because of what's going on in the state of Israel today. And I want to give some credit to the Israeli army that chas v'chalila, anyone who opens their mouth against the army, I would put him in jail for 49 years, plain and simple, for desecration of airspace. That's the most serious crime that I know of, desecration of airspace. It's a Mishnah, Daf Yud Zayin Amid Aleph. Arba Devarim Patru B'Machaneh, when the Jews are in battle, four major halachot are waived. Maybe you make some mikomakom, it means you're allowed to bring trees to make fire, you don't have to worry about gezeila. I can tell you I was in Lebanon in 82 in the war, and the fellows were asking a shaila if they're allowed to eat berries from the trees. They saw berries at, what kind of berries were there? It could be blueberries. These were berries that they didn't have in Israel. And everyone was all excited, oh, it was cherries. So I told them it's an open halacha that you're allowed to eat. I don't have to go into the Gemara with chazer and whatnot. But I said, don't eat too much or it'll affect your stomach. But they were overwhelmed with these berries. So it means you're allowed to bring wood to build fires, to be warm. Petur merechitzat yadayim. You don't have to be makpid on rechitzat yadayim. That's the famous story with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, just the hefech. where this Chayal, who didn't know much about Yiddishkeit, but he was drafted into the Korean War. You know the story now? It was written up in commentary. It's the first major story of the Lubavitcher Rebbe to circulate very widely. And his friends, you know, who had become Balei Tshuva, said, you know, you're going into the army, we want to take you. There's a big rabbi in Crown Heights asking for a bracha. So you could still have Yechid with the Rebbe, then he has Yechid with the Rebbe, and he asks the Rebbe for a bracha, and the Rebbe tells him that you should be very careful before you weekly tell your dayim to make a bracha. The Rebbe explains to him, and this guy goes into the army, and he's very careful, and he's with this artillery unit, South Korea versus North Korea, and he wants to eat, and he has sandwiches, and he says, where do I get water? The Rebbe said, I have to be careful. So he says, no, but it's a war. What? No, I got to be careful. And he tells his friends, I'll be back in a few minutes. I want to walk. I saw water a kilometer away. And he walks away, runs to the water, washes Natila Jediah, makes a bracha, comes back. No one is left. They were just hit directly with a missile. All his friends were wiped out. And he survives because it was marked on the Tulat Yadayim. But you see from the Mishnah, Peturim Eretz Tikvah Yadayim Umi Demai. You can eat Demai, you don't have to worry about whether the Tilkach Tumat Maisrat Umela Arev. And you should know Patur from making an Erev. Now again, the Mishnah is not clear. What does it mean, an Erev? An Erev Hatzaret, an Erev Mavoi, an Erev around the whole area? And I can tell you about the Israeli army. Kol HaKavod to the Israeli army. They have so much has been written, so much has been written on this Mishnah. They have an Aluf Mishneh who heads up a kolel in the army whose only purpose is to come up with answers to questions like this. And they have instructions how you can quickly build an Erev. I can tell you, I got a call from my grandson when he was in Aza. One of my grandsons, Kanayin Hura, 11 already in Hezda, or active duty now, out of Hezda, Miluim. But this kid was in Aza, and he calls me Erev Shabbos. They're getting their food from Kibbutz Sat, which is right near the border. They bring it in on Shabbos. Are they allowed? I said, Ashreichem, that this is a question that you and your friends are asking. But I said, Sabu, that's me. I cannot paskin this. You have to ask your Rav Tzvai, get in touch with him immediately, because the army must have certain rules and regulations. We're dealing here with the Kamalists. We're not dealing with the Rashut HaRav and the Oraita. But could you imagine that the kids are worried? They're on the front line, they're in Aza, their lives are hanging on the in the balance, and they're worried about the food being carried in on Shabbos. So I want to say, in the Kavod, the Israeli army, that we have never had an army in the history of the Jewish people that is so makpid on Shabbos and on Kashrut. And now, Kanayim Hara, the army is starting to build mikvayot. On the army base down south, a $100,000 state-of-the-art mikvah. In Srifin, where you now have Hasidim, Haredim, Hasidim have to go to mikvah every day, the army today is building or has built a mikvah. So, Kol HaKavod to the Israeli army. Now, this Gemara leads to a whole sugya, and I want to go a little bit further. Daf Chafalad Amid Bet Negovin is famous Gemara. And yet, we have the same problem with the Gemara. What does the Gemara mean? Amar Shmuel, Bishar Shetikin Shlomo Eiruvin Unatila Jedayim Yotza Bakal V'Omra. It's a pasuk from Mishle. B'ni Im Chacham Libcha Yismach Libi Gam Ani. That a divine voice went out. Shlomo HaMelech made institutions, made enactments, made gzeirot, we can call them perhaps. I wouldn't call them takanot. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, because you are so smart, My heart rejoices with your wisdom. Now, what did Shlomo HaMelech institute here? Was he machmir or was he mekil? Was he stringent or was he lenient? What did he do here? What are we talking about? Erev Chatzerot. And the simple pshat in the Gemara is it was a twofold institution by Shlomo HaMelech. On one hand, backyards are a Reshit HaYachid. You should be able to carry from a backyard to a backyard. Right or wrong, it's a Reshit HaYachid. That means, give you a simple example, let's take the backyards in a community like Teaneck, like Lawrence, like Beverly Hills. So you have a few from people living one next to another. They all have beautiful backyards. They should be able to carry from one backyard to another backyard. They should be able to carry on that whole block. It's a Reshit HaYachid to Reshit HaYachid to Reshit HaYachid. Shlomo HaMelech made a takana that you can't carry. Why can't you carry? Because if you can carry, for the sake of argument, from Rabbi Rubin's house to Michael Miller's house, people will think you can carry from a Reshit HaYachid to Reshit HaRabim, which is an Issa B'Oraita. People will be confused. People will say you can carry from one domain to another domain. If you can carry from one domain to another domain, you should be able to carry from a Reshit HaYachid to a Reshit HaRabim. So Shlomo HaMelech made a takana, you cannot carry. Stringency. No. The Gemara says God created the Eitz Hara and He created the solution. We study Torah, it's the solution. He created the solution, Shlomo HaMelech. Erev Chatzerot. That you can make an Erev Chatzerot and you can combine your ownership, you know, with the matzah every year in Yerushalayim. They take a box of matzahs, it's on display in the office of the Moetzah HaDatit. They make a bracha, they make a kinyan for all the people, B'dein Eruva, with this Erev, we should be able to carry from house to house, building to building, Reshit HaYachid to Reshit HaYachid. That's an Erev Chatzerot. Gave us the solution. Gave us the absolute solution. So what do you stress here? The leniency, the solution, or the stringency, the prohibition? And what does it mean, a Ruvin? Maybe it's not just Erev Chatzerot. Maybe a Ruvin means a lot more than Erev Chatzerot. Shituf Mavoi. Shituf Mavoi is one step above Erev Chatzerot. What that means, it's very, very similar to Erev Chatzerot in reality, but that already combines the passageway. In other words, the way homes were built at the time of Chazal, you had backyards, and then you had public passageways that led to the Reshit HaRabim. So, you have Shituf Mavai, you join together, the same concept. Then maybe it means the Erev we're talking about, the Erev around an entire city. The students from Lakewood shoot at Rav Menashe Klein. Shlomo HaMelech was metakin Erev L'chumra. He asked, you want to be mekil? You want to be lenient? Rav Menashe Klein answers, And here you have to see it in a vein, inside. He realizes that there's a kitrug here. In other words, they're not just arguing with him. They're finding fault with him. So he doesn't want to come out and wash them away, wipe the floor with them, throw a world of lamdanut at them. And he says very nicely, he says, Ani malameid aleihem zchut. I understand you young people. You don't know how to learn that well yet. You don't know the sources that well. You don't know the rhythm. I'm using the word rhythm. That's my word, but I don't know of a better word. You don't know the rhythm of Psak Halacha. He says, you're misinterpreting the Gemara. And Reb Menashe HaKatan goes on to stress, not the stringency, the leniency, and brings down, and he was a tremendous bucky, Reb Menashe Klein, you gotta give credit, the guy had shas and rishonim at his fingertips. I know this from Eidut Riyah. You know it from his 18 volumes of response to literature. Had it at his fingertips. He shows Mordechai, he shows sources that it's not just Erev Chatzeret, not just Sheet of Mavoi, but the whole concept of Erev is beautiful, is to be stressed, is to be followed. And you youngsters don't know how to really learn yet. And that's why you find fault with my reasoning. Now, I want to tell you, this is exactly the story I told you a number of years ago with Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank. If you recall, I mentioned in class, maybe it's before your time, but I mentioned in class, when I came in Aliyah in 69, I wasn't this stupid. I learned right away I'll never make a living in Israel. It was a terrible system then because a good deal of the economy was black. And I was salaried. One paycheck, the Jewish agency, one paycheck, the Israeli government. No. Your salary. Your tax. Wow. What taxes were. It's a lot different today, Baruch Hashem. It's a black market then. Money. I told you, every Thursday night, black market guys used to come into the Beis Medrash here and change dollars and checks. It was a whole business. And I remember they asked the Baron Lichtenstein if you're allowed to do it. So Rabbi Aaron, you have to understand, totally ethical, totally moral. Rabbi Aaron said, I don't know if you can do it enough, but one thing I can tell you, the government goes to the black market. Pinchas Sapir was from Tzuvalk, by the way. Tzuvalk, Sapir. Remember Pinchas Sapir? He was a Tzuvalk. When he met Reb David Lifshitz, they embraced. They broke into stories about their youth. It was a different Mapainik. They had connection there. So when they had to control the value of the lira, the dollar, he went to the black market, as if to say, said, if the government can do it. You know, the Gemara in Gezeilev Aveda, you'll look up, I wrote on this in tradition, in Rekhapet Aron, Dinah de Machot de Dinah, you'll see, if it's not a law that the government enforces for everyone, then there's no din in the malchuta. So that's what Reb Aaron was saying. But you see, it was a different world then. But one thing I made up my mind, I came in Aliyah, I'm not going to make a living, true, hard years, but I'm going to grab in as much Torah knowledge as possible. And I had heard rumors about that terrible story with Panovich. You know what I'm talking about? Where after World War II, the woman comes to Bnei Brak, and she gets a heter from Gedol Yisrael to remarry, and she remarries, and she has two children, and the children are in Panovich Yeshiva Litzirim, and her first husband survived and went to America, went to Brooklyn, saved up a little money. It's before the Six-Day War, this is in the 50s. Where's the first place you go to when you come to visit Israel before 67? B'nai Brak, Yerushalayim was a little border town, was nothing with nothing, was a sakonat nefashet here, the Arabs were a few kilometers from here. So he goes to B'nai Brak, and who does he meet on the streets? His wife. And she's remarried with children. So, I mean, you understand the depth of this tragedy? These are kids learning in yeshiva, Panovich Litzirim, and Kleimish, they seem to be Mamzerim 100%. So, I heard rumors that Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank did what the Masham had recommended, what Rav Herzog wrote about in the unfinished tshuva from manuscript. I heard rumors that he did a Beitel Haget Bifnei Echad. You know, I'm talking, I can't go into the Gemara in Gittin, Daf Lamed Gimel, Lamed Bet, that he got the first husband to send his wife a get al yedei shliach. He had the shliach be mevatel the get Bifnei Echad, and if that's the case, who was Nashaloka Hogan? So Chazal said, we'll teach him a lesson. Afkina Rabbanin Kedusha Minei. The Gemara and Gittin. Okay? And he did it lahalacha. So, I heard that he was asked, now why don't you publish the tshuva? And Reb Tzvi Pesach is very clever. He says, Ich will nicht die yeshivische Kindaten Gas zon reden from me. I don't want the yeshiva youngsters on the streets to gossip about me. It's exactly what Reb Menashe Klein is telling these Lakewood kids. And I have to tell you, I went after it, and I came up with a name that none of you know, but Avraham will recognize, Rav Shalom Pechenik. Not Shalom, he was, his son is Shalom. I think Rav Yitzchak Pechenik. Rav Yitzchak Pechenik was Rav in the Bronx. He could have been a Hasidic Rebbe, but he was a Mizrachist. So in the 30s, the Balabatim said, you can't be our Rebbe, when his father died. And he wound up in America, saved his life. And he became the head of Heichal Shlomo. And I knew him very well from the Bronx. No, Yitzchak is the other son. I'm trying to think of his first name. I knew him as Rav Pechenik, but he had to have a first name. He had two sons. He had Shalom and Yitzchak. Yitzchak Nebuk was killed in a car accident. He was one of the first workers on the Bar Ilan computer, the index to response to literature. So I have a letter in my possession from Rav Pechenik, saying Eidut Nemana in the name of the Yoshev Rosh of the Moetza Hadatit of Yerushalayim, who was present when Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank did the Hafkad Kedushin, and every rumor I had heard in America was correct. But you see what Tzvi Pesach was chayshish for is exactly what the Menashe Klein says. This is not for kids. This is not for freshly minted rabbis, with all due respects to yeshivas, Rabbi Yitzchak Haran, that can have a 3.5 hour Chag HaSmicha. I started to watch it. I'm about 30 minutes in. Everyone is singing V'natan Lanu Torah Emet, and Rabbi Mark Penner and Richard Joel are leading the singing, and I am seeing, all right, they're very nice, but the speeches, I want to hear the speeches, but I heard a critique all over the world from people, too many speeches. Okay, you got to know, when you run an affair, the audience has 1.5 hours of listening. After that, they go to sleep. I just told, as a result of the critique I heard of the Chag HaSmicha, I told the people in Bernard Revel Graduate School, they're making this big affair, the book launch, whatnot. I said, from my point of view, I don't need anyone to introduce me. Don't need eulogies. I don't need introductions. Give me 1.5 hours. The only person that counts that night is Bernard Revel. But they're not going to listen entirely, but they promise, but they got to publicize Bernard Revel Graduate School. I understand it, but I don't want endless introductions. Bernard Revel, that's what counts. I don't want to get up to speak where the people are asleep already. That once happened to the Rav, where the person who had their reasons why, and I can't go into it in public with the microphone running, but he was introduced. It took 35 minutes. The person introducing him didn't know how to stop because he had once slapped a rub's face 40 years earlier, and he was doing tshuva 30 years earlier. And when the rub got up, the rub said that introduction was too long. No one has kayach to listen. I'll give my talk tomorrow morning. And that was the end, okay? So you got to know, gentlemen, you're going into the rabbinate. You get up to preach. If you can't say it in 18 minutes, don't get up to preach. That's the cutoff point.
And that's real involvement for me, Chavero Barabbi.
It's a terrible story, but it involves two Malbitnei B'nei Chavero Barabbi, 30 years apart. Okay. We'll allude to it in the Monday class.
When the Rav spoke, everybody woke up.
And like, the Rav evidently felt the introduction was too long. Be aware. Common sense. Back here, Reb, kids, you can be freshly minted rabbi. All the great people put their hands on you. Smicha, kedat v'kedin. But humility. This Gedolei Yisrael. You know how to learn. You know how to learn. Believe me. To be matar in a guna, which I have a schut, I couldn't do that in 1961 when I got smicha. And believe me, I had a much better head in 61. I was sharp as you can imagine. I actually got an aleph from Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein in Havana, I think in 98, and an aleph. He gave two grades, knowledge and your Havana. Oh boy. But the paskin, you gotta know Shas, you gotta know Poskim, you have to be Mishamish, Tamidir Chachamim, and Shemish also involves learning Shira to Tribut. Read Rav Avadja says that, but you have to talk and learning with Rav Moshe, with Rav Yosef Elio Henkin, Mindach Redman learning with the Rav, you have to talk and learning with Rav Avadja Yosef, then you can Paskim. Okay? So, I stand on the side of Rav Menashe Klein. He hit them, but in a nice way, he says, you're youngsters yet. You don't really understand Psak. Yes, Avraham.
Wow, and I'm sure you covered this, that Be'er Halacha.
Yeah, you know, we dealt with that.
How come?
To be Machmir.
On Rosh Hashanah, you don't blow shofar.
Yeah, we dealt with it in class. So the Be'er Halacha reaches the conclusion that Baal Nefesh Yachmir. We're going to deal with it. He's going to deal with it. But I will only answer you.
600,000
600,000 may have existed. The problem was that Chazal Wachoshish, not every place can make an Erev. In other words, there's always going to be the city where Jews will be and there will be no Erev. You don't have to go further than modern times. When the walls came crumbling down in Russia, now you start to have a Reuven. But for 30 years, no one thought in terms of an Eruv. You speak in terms of the United States, take a look at the Hamptons, West Hampton, how Jews are fighting against an Eruv. Take a look at Tenafly, what went on. Can they put an Erev up yet? What was finally decided? I think it was appealed and appealed and appealed. I think they finally were able to put an Erev up. So that would answer the Be'er Halacha. But we're going to deal with it in much, you'll see, but not yet. It's right here. I'm following his text. Hold on now. I'm following his text. Ask Shmuel how to get the Shurim. You can pick all this up in America. I just spoke with Vic Snow. He sends regards to everyone. And Vic said to me, Rebbe, I'm following your shurim. They're coming across clear as a bell. Baruch Hashem. These little gizmos going. Remember what was in front of the Rav, what recorded? You needed four people to carry it in. And here, these little gizmos that this redhead, this is really Rothkopf sitting here. Rothkopf. He puts these gizmos in front of me and they're listening in Australia. It's unbelievable. Okay, let me go a drop further. And here he hits away. And here, gentlemen, you get involved with the Gnevish shtick, which, again, maybe I'm naive, maybe I've amounted to nothing in life, maybe I don't have worldly knowledge, maybe I don't know how to fight with people, deal with people, yell at people, lie to people. Someone called me if they could buy my book from me. I said, I don't touch money on principle. I wouldn't be Aaron Rakefet if I took money. Imagine I'm selling my books. Forget it, it's not me. But I have to tell you, something happened here, and you see it on the websites. And again, I've said a thousand times over, the computer is fabulous. The knowledge it has is unbelievable. On the other hand, you got to teach a kid not to look at pornography. He has a choice. All of life is choice. Fine, pornography is bad. There's something worse on the internet. The Lashon Hara, the Rechilit, the lies, the fabrications. You can take pictures today. Phony. So here's what happened. They accused, the Talmidim from Lakewood accused Reb Menashe Klein, how dare you come out against all the Rabbanim? And they reproduce a chruz from the Agudas HaRabbanim that we quoted about you're not allowed to build an Erev in New York. Now that chruz was against Manhattan, not against Brooklyn. On that cruise, they put on the signature of Reb Moshe Feinstein. Reb Menashe Klein shows them and sends them a copy of the original cruise. Reb Moshe's signature is not there. As a matter of fact, Reb Menashe Klein quotes what we quoted in class. Remember the tshuva of Reb Moshe to Rabbi Dr. Leo Young? Ichav Mishpam Erev in Manhattan. But Rabbanim put it up. If you feel they are reliable and they are Choshuva Rabbanim and fine Talmidei Chachamim, you can depend upon them. And you can be somach on their Erev. So you see, it is exactly the opposite of what they're trying to show him, that Moshe signed. He says, number one, that cruise was against Manhattan, not against Brooklyn. Brooklyn was not on the agenda then. Brooklyn doesn't come on the agenda till the early 70s, when you already have a rhythm all over Queens and in suburbia such as Muncie. Number two, Reb Moshe's signature is a forgery. And I have to tell you, this is a tremendous problem today. I did something the other day that any lawyer would laugh at me and tell me I'm an idiot. But what can I do? I trust people. Bernard Rellengrant wants to send out a letter. They want over my signature. So I told them, look, I don't have time. I'm a team player. I told them if the chairman of the board of trustees of Bernard Revel Graduate School, Morty Katz, a great individual, approves the letter, you can use my signature. So now I have to send them my signature. So Sherry sent my signature. Fine. You send your signature. They can take that signature for all I know. They'll put out a chruz that I came out against serving the Israeli army. They'll put out a cruise that I come out against going to a yeshiva that gives you a high school degree. What do they call it here? What's the word they use? There's a word. What do they call it?
Bagrut,
right. Bagrut. A bagrut that gives you bagrut. How would you say that in English, bagrut?
Matriculation.
Not the region. Yeah, it's like a region, but say that bagrut. Boger. Bagrut. Take your signature, they can do anything. They can put out that, I put out that the Rav was against going to university. Right? Then you can do anything. And you can take a picture today. Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm waiting for people in Washington. I have the picture which I consider my key to Olam Haba. I have a big schut there, how that picture was uncovered, and because of the Rav, and because of my work on the Rav. So I have the Rav with the 6th and 7th Rebbeim. So now in Jewish Action, in the summer issue, I told them, you must use that picture. You know, I have that article on the Rav and the Rebbe, so they're going to use that picture. I'm waiting for someone to say, this picture can't be. Rakefet played with the computer and falsified the picture. You understand what I'm saying? I'm just waiting. But Reb Menashe Klein here is sharp to the point, and I have to tell you, absolutely correct. Now, here he gets hysterical. And this is Reb Menashe Klein. You can't, you're not going to find this elsewhere. He goes through all the cities that have a river, and he goes through the bungalow colonies. And he says in the bungalow colonies, even though the streets are more than 16 amot wide, what a hammer we say, it's about 24 feet, right? We did a cheshbon. By the way, I haven't been in the bungalow colonies in 50 years already. Are the streets that wide? In my time, when I was in Camp Moshava, there were little streets. But alright, I guess today cars have to go through two lanes, four lanes, you certainly have. And he says, everyone carries them. Everyone builds an Erev. He says, suddenly all the Litvakim forgot about the Mishkan of Yaakov, and everyone is dancing with the Bet Ephraim. And then he says, and this fear that Moshe writes about, and you fellas from Lakewood raised, how can you build an Erev? Maybe there'll be a kilkel. The Erev falls down. This is the old story. This is the Mishnah in Eruvin, that you have to leave over a little part of the town, right or wrong. This is Rav Kites. One Shabbos a year, they should remember. What did we have this winter with that terrible snow? You don't realize what that snow did to us. Yitzchak and I, God, I look back now, I was an idiot. I went to shul every day. We didn't have a minyan 4 or 5 days, and I climbed up the steps with a cane. I went, Mom, it's a konet nefasha. I came here, I fell down, and I couldn't lift myself up, but my whole love boy lifted me. Then I didn't realize it was meniscus. My kneecaps weren't working. Only afterwards did I realize what was happening. A few days afterwards, when my knee gave here, should live and be well. We should all be well. Briut, bariut haguf. Oh shit, it was going to fall down. So Rabbi Menashe Klein says, they built a river all over Europe. What are you making, a new gezerah? How are you allowed to make a gezerah? And now this is vintage Reb Menashe Klein. Reb Menashe Klein knew what's going on all over. He was not isolated. So Reb Menashe HaKotten says, wait a minute, he says. We have factories where the workers are Jews and Gentiles. Christmas, Hanukkah time comes, they have a Christmas tree and a Hanukkah menorah next to it. He says, we have Jews in the modernium who like, he's talking, you know, Jews, reformed, conservative, assimilated. Hanukkah bush, remember Molly Goldberg, that's where the first time that word came out on the TV, a Hanukkah bush. They light Hanukkah candles and they have a Christmas tree. He says, did anyone ever dream of saying Sheyesh Levatel Hadlakat Neirot Hanukkah Mipnei Shergomim Al Yezeh Shenichsholim Al Yedei Hadlakaton Shemadlikin Gam Kletz Machilan? Did anyone? You're going to be chayshish for a kilkel? Ain't lacha kilkel yoteh gedola mizu? And he gives this example, the Christmas tree. And by the way, this is true of every department store in New York, in the New York area, probably all over the Western world. In New York, I remember particularly, every department store, big Christmas trees and Hanukkah menorah. Don't you have famous plays, movies, Santa Claus, and the little kid is asking, are you a Yiddish kind? And Santa Claus looks at the kid and tells him, Mindaf Sina Shema Shabbos, you gotta be from me, Santa Claus. He's making a living playing Santa Claus. And he said, all right, what are you gonna abolish the Hanukkah? Wasn't there a critique of Chabad? Chabad goes, but Parchesir and lights these tremendous Hanukkah candles all over. No, there was a critique that they're Christmas trees, they're what? Yeah, but Chabad is not telling you that Christmas equals Hanukkah. Chabad is telling you, we have Hanukkah, we have to be proud, we have to have Pesumei Nisa. Everyone is out to criticize. So some wise guy says to me, where is there Pesumei Nisa that the Goyim have to see the Hanukkah candles? I said, first of all, the Pesumei Nisa is halavai, the Jews should see the Hanukkah candles. It's like Kriyat HaMegillah, what Chabad did when they opened up in Rechavia. By the way, Goldberg, Rabbi Goldberg, his brothers listened to my Sheyurim. These Chabadnikim, I met them. I was walking on the street there, you know, minding my business, looking very, anyone's dreams of Rabbi Kefet. Do I look like Rabbi Kefet? And I'm walking, and these kids hear my voice. And they jump on me. Are you Rabbi Rakefet? These are his brothers. So when he opened up, it's a block away from you. I thought, what's gonna be big deal? We need a Chabad in Rechavia, Kiryat Shmuel, Sharei Chesed. What, it was crazy? This guy has the place dancing. Purim. Every store, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, every hour on the hour, on Rechov Aza and on Rechov Kankal, a different Megillah reading in a different restaurant. My wife walks down the block, 11 o'clock, my other, a 1 minute walk, they're reading the Megillah, and she tells me, she goes early, gets a seat right next to the Baal Korei. She says, Chiloniyim, come over. They see Megillah reading, they walk over. No, you can look at it again. Like Takanet Shlomo HaMelech. You can laugh at it. What Chabad doing? On the street. Or you can look at it. Look how smart they are. That this Megillah reading caught on, that Jews who never dreamt you read Megillah, that maybe at night they go to shul, they never dreamt in the morning you read Megillah, and here they stopped, they listened. My wife told me at that reading there were 40, 50 people there in the store and outside, and the Balabayas is so happy he gets publicity. Everyone knows this restaurant exists. And my neighbor, the lady has a problem walking. It was terrific. We're 18 Berlin. Number 1 Berlin. Number 2 Berlin. Whatever it is. Number 3 Berlin. Number 3 I think it is. They're reading Megillah across the street. He's very powerful. I'll tell you, Rav Menashe Klein, he knew what was going on. He knew what was going on. And then he goes in already to Rav Aaron Katla. And again, I stand on my ground that there's no question that Rav Aaron Katla was opposed to a Erev in Manhattan. In my humble opinion, it had influence on Reb Moshe's very strong stand regarding Brooklyn. Reb Moshe quotes Reb Aaron 3 or 4 times, as I showed you. Reb Menachem Kasher tries to take Reb Aaron Cutler, and he says, I was waiting for an answer from him. He didn't give me the answer. He was late in giving me the answer. And therefore, he tries to leave you with the opinion that perhaps Reb Aaron was not so opposed to the Erev. I can tell you, as someone who knows the period and knows the year and knows the Rebbe's relation with Reb Aaron was opposed. He was not a posek. And when he said that Daftuch Abed in the Sugya, this is what I heard, Bishat Maisa, Ich halt nicht in der Sugya für Jorim Leid, I wasn't in the Sugya for many years, this was Reb Aaron. He was a Rosh Yeshiva. A Rosh Yeshiva is not someone who's dealing with Psak day in and day out. The Rav was forced into Psak, Baal Kocho, willy-nilly, because he became a rabbi in Boston. The Rav's tradition, where did he know Psak? Where did the Chaim Brisker know Psak? That's what they had the Brisker dying for. You all know that. You all read the stories. You all heard the stories. All right, I can't go into detail, but it's an absolute fact. But the Rav, when you're a Rav in Boston, and Rabbi Rubin's father, Mr. Rubin, comes over to the Rav and asks him a question, the Rav has to give an answer. And you see, with the Rav with Psak, what I write up in the Rav, which is someone just asked me about it the other day, a whole Shaila, with AID. Remember where that woman calls the Rav, and the Rav says, I don't know what to do. The Rav is talking, and the woman says to him, and she had had a child already, B-A-I-D, but now she became a little bit frumma, and she was going to a conservative temple, and she learned about Mamzerim, and she asks her rabbi, I have one child, can I have another child, A-I-D? The rabbi says, I can't answer, call Rabbi Soloveitchik, he knows everything, he's the greatest rabbi. So she calls Rabbi Soloveitchik, and he tells her, I don't know what to answer you, call me in another 2 weeks, I'll have to think it over, I'll have to work it out. The Rav, you understand, Psak, and the Rav says, Oli mi yitzri, Oli mi yotzri, paraphrases the Gemara in Brachat. He says, if I say she can't do it, it means the first kid is a mamza. And if I say she can do it, it means I'm paskin la'alacha, that you can do A-I-D, that there's no problem with mamzeirim. No, if you called Reb Moshe, you would have gotten a psak right away. You called Reb Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, you understand? These were people that had a paskin, but he acknowledges Reb Aaron, he acknowledges Reb Aaron's opposition, he acknowledges the Mishkanot Yaakov, but he says the entire world of tradition, of the Hasidic world, of every city, and the Bet Ephraim, we are Mekil. Okay, now we have arrived. And now we take on what Reb Avraham asked a minute ago. Yes, this is halacha, this is psak, this is minig Yisrael, and again he stresses how important minig is, and he calls the Gemara Yevama, the Gemara we spent so much time on a year ago, that even if Eliyahu HaNavi would come and tell you that the shoe you use to give chalitza is not the proper shoe, you would throw Eliyahu HaNavi out and tell him, Kva Nahagu, this is what the Jews do, this is our minhag. Fine. So then, you deal the Mishnah Berurah. And the fellows from Lakewood are quoting the Mishnah Berurah, the Bihalach, everything we dealt with months ago, where the Mishnah Berurah says, yes, Machlokes HaPoskim, he counts up. By the way, I in class gave more sources that the Mishnah Berurah didn't have already, that we have today, but it's almost every last new source is Lahakel, not Lahachmir, because the Mishnah Berurah reaches, I think, 8 against 8, Mashahu Kazeh. But you look into Shmir Chabad Kehilchata, the latest edition, you'll see the long footnote and what he counts up. So the Mishnah Berurah says a Yirei Shemayim should be Machmir. Now here of course, you have to understand the status of the Mishnah Berurah. He, and I've said this so many times, the Rav related to the Mishnah Berurah like a Rav and Achrim. But he didn't have the awe that we have for the Mishnah Berurah. Reb Chaim knew the Mishnah Berurah, related to the Mishnah Berurah, but it wasn't with the awe we relate. The Mishnah Berurah was Zaycha, and I use the word, he was a folk tzaddik. There's something about the Mishnah Berurah that everyone idolized him, and he was above and beyond politics or narrowness. Everyone related to the Mishnah Berurah. It was a folk tzaddik, the way he dressed, the way he conducted himself. But the story's a legendary. I mean, I have a direct connection to the Mishnah Berurah because I was quite close to his son-in-law, Reb Mendel Sachs. So I know the Mishnah Berurah's daughter. It's from his second marriage. She was, of course, much younger. I knew the Mishnah Berurah's daughter. Mishnah Berurah. So the new generation, my generation, your generation, we already relate to the Mishnah Berurah as if to say a posek achron. I don't have to tell you how many editions of the Mishnah Berurah there are. I don't have to tell you today, you see how ignorant the generation is, that they have editions of the Berurah with nekudot, with dots, with exclamation points, with diagrams, with English translation. I don't know, there can be more than one English translation already. Today, to learn Mishnah Berurah, it used to be 6 little volumes. Today, I can't lift the new editions of the Mishnah Berurah. I don't have that physical strength. So, yeah, take a look. And what's that one volume? How many volumes is the set all together? Is it 6? Wow. That volume is as big as three volumes in my set. Okay? Tirshu again. Kalakavod. Beautiful. Gentlemen, Reb Menashe Klein is being criticized, critiqued. How do you dismiss Baal Nefesh Yachmir? So here he's very powerful. And boy, he hits the nail on the head. Gentlemen, let me tell you something I learned from the Rav in the mid-50s. The Rav gave a Pesach Shir. I was a high school kid yet. It's that famous Pesach Shir, I believe, where he spoke about vegetable oil and Bartons wanted to sue the yeshiva, sue the Rav.
Corn syrup.
Here it's vegetable oil. Corn syrup is vegetable oil. Corn syrup, correct. And so he said something else. He got involved. You know, we are Ashkenazim, Sfaradim, we have differences. Last year, I don't think we have Sfaradim in the class, but for a few years I had Kasola, a Sfaradim kid, your relative, and he would laugh at all of us. He used to say to me, Rebbe, I go shopping for Pesach, I throw everything into the wagon while you dummies have to look and check and schmeck and compare. He's right. So I want to ask you a question. Is there anything that tastes better than Israeli egg matzah? Tam gan eaten. Have you tasted Israeli egg matzah? No? I want to use it on Pesach. Lomini gara. So I have to see. I still have teeth. I can't use it. Right or wrong? A psak of the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah, the Shulchan Aruch, Paskins, all the Sfadim you see in Machne Yehud, the next week already, you'll be able to buy every type of cake and candy under the sun, and it'll say Matzah Shira. For Sfadim, B'nei Edot HaMizrach. Then you have a Chlei Kitniyot. Alright, beautiful. Now we can't use it. But the Ramah says, if you're a little kid, or an old man, or you're sick, you're allowed to use it. So what does that tell you? All right, so machlokes rishonim, you know, water, well, without water, fruit juice, the machmitz right away, 18 minutes, etc. Don't worry, going, it's a sugyum psachim. Fine. What do we see from the Ramah? If the Ramah paskins that old geezers without teeth can eat egg matzah, it means Me'ika Hadin, the Ramah Paskins, like the Shulchan Aruch. The fact that we don't use the Ekmatzah is a stringency that the B'nai Ashkenaz will makabel upon themselves. So, I can buy Ekmatzah, I can eat it before Pesach, I can eat it after Pesach. I used to have an Italian barber, all the barbers were Italian when I was growing up. He loved the Passover holiday. He used to ask me, when is it coming? When Mr. Menona, when is it coming? He used to love the egg matzah. Oh, he used to praise the, I told him, we don't eat that. That's only a treat before and after. We have to eat regular matzah. I do want to tell him the regular matzah in America tasted like wallpaper. But the egg matzah, oh, he loved it. But the Israeli egg, but what does it mean? So, The Reb Menashe Klein says, what is the Mishnah Berurah telling us? He's telling us, Me'ikar HaDin, you can be samech on the Mekilim. You can be samech on all the Shittat, and we'll see next week, I'll show you, next time we meet rather, after Pesach, I'll show you Reb Menashe Klein gives something like 10 different reasons why Brooklyn is not a reshut of Rabban D'Oraita, and he gives eight of them, and certain things he says that are irrevocable, and you can't refute him. He's very powerful. But you want to be machmir? That's a chumrah. It's not me'ika hadin. V'zat min in Yiddish, machmir is famir alein. I want to be machmir. I told you, I don't use kosher gelatin. I'm willing to spend 7 shekel more a kilo and get that candy that's fish gelatin, Manchester based, not the London based, in the Shuk. You know, if you've been to the Shuk, you know what I'm talking about. That candy is all, it's a revolution. And I see on Shabbos, they give it out to the kids, but I don't say a word. Yesh amila smoch, regular gelatin, kosher gelatin, but fish gelatin, but it's 7 shekel more. Fish gelatin is healthier, but it costs more. It costs more to produce because there's endless hides of cattle that you can chop up and churn and turn into gelatin. But fish gelatin, my student has the process. My Talmud chaver, David Holzer, married to my student, all his brothers from my student's sister, David Holzer has Rabbi David Holzer, Musmach of the yeshiva. He has the patent on fish gelatin. But all right, it's a chumrah. But a chumrah, fine. Ich bin machmir fasichalein. And here he opens his mouth, and he says, I want to ask you guys in Lakewood. I'm going to talk about Shabbos. Rabbeinu Tam Shita. No, how long do you hold Shabbos? We're dealing with an Issa Karet. We're dealing with something way beyond the Machlokes, whether you can make an Erev from Brooklyn. The Mishnah Brura says the same thing. The Vilna Gaon, they were all Chayshish for 72 minutes. The Rav, I think he held 96 minutes to do an Issa D'Oraita after Shabbos. David Applebaum, Hashem Yikom Damo, his mother used to say, his mother Jackie used to say to me, my David held Shabbos until Tuesday. I once called him after Shabbos with a medical shayla. He, hello? Doesn't say an extra word. Then I realized that Halknach Shabbos, he's just answering the emergency phone if it's a medical question. For me, yesterday, we davened in my building. We have a minyan downstairs. Matzoi Shabbos, Matzoi Yantif. It's a minyan already, 20, 30 years. Get a big crowd, and then there's a minyan a block away. Look, it's Yerushalayim. So I'm responsible for the Shabbos elevator. At 8:33, Shabbos was over. I'm looking at my watch, 7:33, right? I'm adding an hour. I already added the hour. 7:33, and... where's the elevator? Ah, it's coming to this floor. I jump in with the middle of Takadosh, Valetzion. Jump in, turn off the elevator. Alright. I don't hold 72 minutes. I have one son-in-law who does, or maybe two sons-in-law who do, some grandchildren who do, but I'm raised on the Yerushalmi Shita, which was whatever system they use, I follow. The Moetzet HaTatit of Yerushalayim, their calendar. He says, how come no one says a word about the hundreds of thousands of Jews who end Shabbos in America at the end of 42 minutes, 46 minutes? How come they do not worry about the Mishnah Brura and the Vilna Gaon and Reb Chaim Briska? Ah. And you see, this is halacha. Chumra is chumra. But there is a concept, Me'ika Hatin. And finally, let me end off. 1970s began a new minhag, ripping the Erev down. Could you imagine ripping the Erev? How do you do a thing like that? And they justified it. Reb Meisher's Psak. He says, Reb Meisher's Psak, Reb Meisher Paskin Bal Nefesh Yachmir La'atzmo. But what does this have to do with an Erev? For people who accept the Erev. For people who are somach on the poskim who put up the Erev. How can you rip it down? How are you allowed to rip it down? How are you allowed to destroy an Erev? People, this is just the opposite. Because people will wind up carrying on Shabbos, believing the Erev is still intact. And Reb Menashe Klein fights back with all 10 fingers. Reb Meisher, he says, didn't say the shita is wrong. He said he's machmir. But if Rabbanim put up an Erev and they are baharchi and they are reliable, you can be samach on them. And Rav Menashe Klein, very powerful example. 72 minutes. How come you don't yell? How come you don't shout? Why is it only on this topic that you have raised the roof and actually rip down the wires of the Tzirat HaPetach? And here he uses very sharp language. I'm afraid that at times your viewpoint is no more than double talk. And he uses that word, safak fula. By the way, he knows modern Hebrew. Rav Menashe Klein, in addition to everything else, he has a very, very good command of modern Hebrew. So to summarize, we're far from finished, Avraham. This topic of Erev tantalizes me. I have to do England and the problems there and Karpov and what happened in Toronto. Fascinating topic.
We mentioned that again,
and we're going to mention it very big at a certain point next year when we devote endless years to the 18 volumes of the Mishnah Halachot. And I'm going to tell you something else. You will never be bored. He is fascinating. And in the middle of the tshuva, the halacha, he brings in a Hasidic story. You'll see how different he is than the Rav, than Rav Moshe, even than Rav Avadji Yosef. The Midrash Yitzchak, Chelkat Yaakov, brings in a Hasidic story.
How is it that
beautiful
yeshiva we never heard of?
Yitzchak, yes.
Actually, we should have taken you in a time machine back to YU in 1963. And you could have taught the yeshiva boys.
I want to ask you a question.
You know how I can get was?
Of all the shirim I have given, thousands of different shirim, it's all because I came in Aliyah and knew I wouldn't make a living, so I decided I want to know Kol HaTorah Kula. Believe me, I don't even have one finger out of 10 of Kol HaTorah Kula. But at least you have to admit, I'm trying. Right or wrong. Okay, that's all I want to say. I'm having a lot of Achmas Nefesh with the OU, with the books coming here. It's beyond comprehension what we're up against. If anyone has contact with the OU here, I'd like to open a channel with them, because I'd like, if the books aren't being republished, that I should make a living out of them. Believe me, I'm going to lose money, but that's not the point. The books are being republished because people want them, because the books are important. You've got to make them available. You can't believe the problems Stephanie ran into trying to arrange a book launch here. Because they're in New York. How do they get the books from there to here? If anyone has contact with the OU, let me know.
Is it cheaper to print books here?
They printed in New York. What can I tell you? The OU is doing its own printing today. We'll cross the bridge, but we have to start crossing it soon. So to reiterate, I have surprises today. Let me reiterate. To reiterate, no question, this topic is fascinating. Rav Menashe Klein is fighting back.
Just ask, what volume is all this?
I'll give it to you. It's in many volumes, but the heart of it is in Mishnah Halachot Chelek Chet, Simanim Samach Bet, through Kuf Pei. Then in every volume that counts, that's from 62 to 180, the Simanim of the Tshuvat. The Simanim remain constant. This is the 1982 edition, but there now is a new edition with different pagination, but thank God the Simanim remain constant. In addition, after Chelek Chet, in all the subsequent 10 volumes, or maybe 11 volumes, Tet to Yutchet, to figure out how many there are. He has endless additional tshuvat on Erev. But the heart of it is in Chelek Chet. So what did we do today? Did Shlomo HaMelech come lahachmir or lahakel? And this is basic to the way you view Erev. The fellows from Lakewood are attacking Reb Menashe Klein on many levels, and he defends himself quite strongly. Some of it is laughable. It's maybe, we would say, the Milta de Bedichata, where he gets involved with the Chatzmach tree and the Hanukkah menorah. But when he gets involved with the Mishnah Berurah, he's very powerful. And if you're standing on the barricades about an Erev in Brooklyn, how come you're not fighting the 72-minute battle, which is halachically perhaps much more important? Yes, Avraham.
Just so Rabbi Belsky said from Mishulchan HaLevi, very recent, against the Erev.
Yeah, I quoted him. He quotes Rav Moshe Bick. I'm well aware of it. But Rabbi Belsky is, I don't want to say an extra word, he's involved in very big controversy today. Certain things that he has said are beyond my comprehension, but I don't want to get involved because it's Kvod Hashem Hastedava. But when you defend pedophiles and seducers and rabbis who are serial sex criminals, it's a very serious situation. I know certain details and it's frightening. I want to mention a very interesting story. Haaretz wrote up that a Canadian author put out a book by Penguin. She's Japanese-Canadian, Street of Our Lady. It's based upon a documentary film that was put out by a family. It's about a Hasid Umat Olam, a Polish woman who saved many Jews. One of the Jews she saved is sitting right in this classroom at this minute. Now, the family of the people she saved put out a documentary, did a lot of research, and along comes a Japanese-Canadian author, puts out a book, a so-called novel, but based upon this story. Now, I want to ask you a question. Is this plagiarism or not? Penguin Books stands on their right to publish and says facts are facts, history is history. No one has a copyright on history. And even though it's based upon the documentary, the video, but these are facts. The people suing, of course, claim we put endless work, money, tears, sweat into the documentary. You have no right to take it and turn it into a novel based upon the facts in the documentary. It's a very interesting legal question. It'll be
about 8 papers in the world.
It'll be interesting to see what the court rules.
Very good. I saw the
right. Kala kavod. Now, failed.
My daughter did it.
It's his daughter. Failed Messiah had a piece on an Orthodox Jewish synagogue post nub signing events with couples. Very fascinating. It's Avi Weiss's synagogue. I believe the Hebrew Institute of Riverdale, isn't that Rabbi Weiss's synagogue? Avi Weiss or Weiss's synagogue? But it's interesting. These are people who are already married and they want them to sign prenuptials. Now it's a postnuptial. You're going to be in the rabbinate in America, require couples to sign a prenuptial before you marry them. I also want to comment on the Sefer that my Talmud wrote and gave me a beautiful gift. I've now read the Sefer, and I want to tell you, any of you that are going to go into teaching, this is on Shmuel Aleph. It is a fabulous way to teach. It's like a novel. He takes the entire Sefer and all the Chazal and integrates it into an ongoing novel. It's Kedai. Finally, a real freebie. I have a Talmud who learned in the Kol and learned with me in BMT. His name is Rabbi Jonathan Berger. He's Bucky in Shas. He went through all of Shas and he wrote it up with notes and footnotes and a way to encourage you to learn. If anyone here is doing Daf Yomi, Jonathan Berger is willing to give you a gift. I have two copies of Deitza, which Jonathan writes to me, begins Tuesday, April 1st, and two copies of Rosh Hashanah, which begins May 10th. If anyone is interested, please take them and just leave me a note of thanks to Jonathan and I'll pass it on to him. And tomorrow morning, I have to be honest with you, no one gets in this year. It's $36,000 linked to the shekel, to the IOU list, because what I have tomorrow will blow your mind. Until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Yitzchak, do you have room in your car for the lambs?